Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're taking your stack of sources, the court filings, the analyst reports, all those industry leaks, and we're really digging into the harsh math of entertainment economics.
We are. And the topic is a number I think everyone sort of dreads, but also knows is probably coming.
The $100 video game.
Exactly. And our mission today is to get past that initial sticker shock. For you, the person watching this all unfold, we want to unpack why this might actually be...
Yeah.
Well, necessary. Mm. Is the $100 game inevitable, and why now?
Yeah, why now? Because it's a real economic anomaly when you think about it. Video games have been one of the only things you can buy that has, I mean, basically had a stable price for over a decade and a half.
It's completely unique. So let's unpack that history, because the story of how we're getting to $100 really starts with what our sources are calling the 15-year lock.
Right, so let's set the time frame. We're talking roughly 2005 to 2020. This is the era of the PlayStation 3, the Xbox 360, and then rolling right into the PS4 and Xbox One. You walk into a store, what's the price for a new top-tier game?
$60. That's it. Mm-hmm. It was this completely rigid standard. And when you compare that $60 lock to what was happening everywhere else in the economy, I mean, the contrast is just staggering.
We looked at the data on this, and it really is startling. A movie ticket over that same period, the price nearly doubled.
Mm-hmm.
Your Netflix subscription, which, you know, started as this cheap little DVD service, it skyrocketed. Even something as basic as a Big Mac saw huge inflation.
But the games industry, even with these massive leaps in technology and scale, just kept that disc in the box locked at $60. It was like they were performing these, I don't know, intense financial gymnastics to hold that line.
And then the dam finally kind of tentatively broke.
Yeah.
Right around 2020.
The launch of the PS5, the Xbox Series X.
Right. And publishers took this incredibly timid step of pushing the price from $60 to $70.
Timid is the right word. I mean, they said it was because of more complex development cycles, which was true. But that $10 bump barely made a dent in the inflation that had been building up since 2005.
So that $10 was basically just a rounding error. It didn't prepare anyone for what was coming next.
Not at all. It didn't account for the explosion in development costs, and especially not the post-pandemic inflation that was about to hit everyone.
So if $70 was just barely keeping the lights on in 2020, we have to look at the real engine behind this $100 price tag, and that is the just catastrophic explosion in how much these games cost to make.
This is where we get into the cold, hard data. And a lot of this comes from industry leaks and, believe it or not, official court documents. It just lays bare the complete disconnect between the budget and the retail price.
So let's start with a benchmark. Let's anchor this. The year is 2010. A game like God of War 3 comes out. At the time, it's a technical marvel, a huge, polished AAA game. What did that cost to make?
Approximately $44 million. Mm-hmm. And that was considered the absolute peak of ambition back then.
Okay, $44 million. Now let's jump forward just over a decade.
To 2023. And we know this from Sony's own documents that came out during that big FTC trial with Microsoft.
Yeah.
The development cost for Spider-Man 2 had jumped to over $315 million.
Hold on. Just let's sit with that for a second. From $44 million to $315 million. That's almost an eightfold increase. What is happening? Where does all that money go?
It's a bunch of things, but it really boils down to fidelity and scale. Modern consoles demand photorealistic graphics. The game worlds are exponentially bigger, which means you need huge QA teams. You've got dozens of studios all over the world working together.
And I imagine salaries have gone up too.
Oh, massively. Competition for talent is fierce, and these production cycles are now routinely 5-6 years long. All of that adds up.
So quality and scale drive the budget from $44 million to over $300 million. Now, let's look at the next big one, 2026. The estimates for GTA VA GUP are just, they're on another planet.
Industry analysts are estimating the total budget could cross $2
billion. $2 billion.
That's a staggering figure. And when you put all that together, you just see this broken business model. The costs have gone up by a factor of, you know, 10 to 50 times, but the price you pay has only gone up by $10. It's just, it's unsustainable.
So the publisher is basically stuck, right? They have to make a profit. And our sources say they have two main paths to close that massive gap.
Right. Path one, they saturate the game with really aggressive microtransactions, you know, loot boxes, pay to win stuff. Or path two,
yeah,
they have to increase the upfront price.
And this is where it gets interesting psychologically. The sources say that for the core gamers, the people who buy on day one, a lot of them are actually starting to prefer the second option.
They do. It's a trade-off. They'd rather pay say, $100 up front, if it means the game isn't designed around trying to constantly sell you stuff that cheapens the whole experience.
That feels like a huge shift in what players are willing to tolerate. But before we get to that $100 number, we have to talk about the elephant in the room, the thing that let the $60 price exist for so long.
Inflation.
Inflation.
This is the reality check, because it's all about purchasing power. When you see a $70 price tag, you're not comparing it to today's money. You're comparing it to the $60 you remember paying 20 years ago.
So let's do the math for you, the listener. We use the same U.S. inflation calculators our sources did. So what would $60 back in 2005 when we were all playing Call of Duty 2, what would that be worth in 2026?
Comes out to approximately $98.
Wow, 98. Okay, so that single fact changes the entire conversation.
It really does.
It means when you pay $70 for a new game today, you are, in real, inflation-adjusted money, paying less than people did two decades ago. The $100 game isn't a price hike. It's just catching up.
It's inflation parity.
Yeah.
Exactly. They were selling $98 worth of value for $60 and now $70. The real question isn't why the price is going up. It's how on earth did they keep it so low for so long?
So how did they pull off that magic trick?
Two big things. First, the switch to digital sales. I mean, think about the savings there. Mm-hmm. No manufacturing discs, no printing manuals, no shipping costs, no retailer cut. That saved them a fortune.
And the second thing?
That was the move to post-launch monetization, selling DLC, map packs, season passes. All of that helped prop up the $60 price.
But those savings just aren't enough anymore. Not against $300 million budgets and the huge inflation we've seen since the pandemic.
The balancing act just fell apart. The cost of everything has gone up so much that something fundamental has to give way.
And that something fundamental seems to be in the hands of one company in one game. If the math is this bad, why hasn't every publisher already jumped to $100? Why is everyone waiting for what we're calling the GTA VI factor?
Because if, say, Ubisoft tried to sell the next Assassin's Creed for $100 tomorrow, the market would riot. There's an expected price ceiling for most games.
But not for Rockstar.
Rockstar and its parent company, Take-Two, they just operate in a different economic reality. They are what you'd call a black swan event. Their main product only launches once every 10 or 15 years. That gives them this unique, almost monopolistic leverage.
Which brings us to this core economic idea that's so important here.
Inelastic demand.
Explain what that means for us.
It just means that the demand for the product isn't really sensitive to the price. The cultural pull of a game like GTA Z is so massive that millions of people are going to buy it on day one. It doesn't matter if it's $70, $100, or even $120.
So you're saying if they priced it at, like, $150, the day one sales would basically be the same. That's a little hard to believe.
Well, within a certain range, yes. The data suggests it's true. They know that millions of people feel they have to have it immediately. To avoid spoilers, to be part of the conversation, they have the power to charge what the market will bear.
And their CEO has basically said as much.
He has. Strauss Zelnick, the CEO of Take-Two, famously said, "We deliver a much, much higher quality of value than what we charge for." He's signaling, very clearly, that he believes their product is currently undervalued.
So the strategy everyone expects, the one that will break the ceiling for everyone else, is a $100 base edition for GTA 6.
Right. And if they do that, and it succeeds, which it will, the stigma is gone. The barrier is broken. Suddenly an EA or an Activision has all the cover they need to do the same for their biggest games.
And this is leading to a new term that analysts are throwing around. I think it started as a joke, but now it's being taken seriously. The AAA game.
Yeah, the market is splitting in two. It's what we call bifurcation. You're going to have two clear categories. First, your standard AAA games. These are your great linear 30-hour experiences like a Resident Evil. Those will probably settle in that $70 to $80 range.
And then you have the mega games, the true AAA titles. Right. We're talking GTA 6, The Elder Scrolls 6, maybe the next Witcher. What does that extra A really mean?
That extra A stands for platformization, persistence. Yeah. That $100 price isn't for a one-time product. It's an entry fee into a platform that's designed to last for 10 years. With hundreds of hours of content and constant updates, you're buying something that will stop you from buying other games.
And that leads to this fascinating point from the sources. For a lot of the most dedicated gamers, the price isn't $70 right now.
Not at all.
For the core consumer, the price is already $100. It's just hidden behind what the sources call the illusion of choice.
This is just textbook psychological pricing.
Yeah.
They use these tiered releases to anchor the price you're willing to pay way higher than the number on the box.
Let's break down how that works using a game like Star Wars Outlaws or any new Call of Duty. You usually get three versions.
Right. You have the standard edition, $70, maybe $80. That just gets you the game on launch day. Then you have the gold edition, which is almost always priced at $100.
And here's the kicker. What's the one thing that $100 gold edition always includes, besides some cosmetic junk?
Early access, usually 3 days early.
That's the manipulative key right there. They're not selling you a season pass for $30. They are selling you fear of spoilers for an extra $30. For the hardcore fan who's on Reddit, who's watching streams, you simply cannot wait 3 days.
Impossible. This story will be ruined for you. So that $70 price is really just the price for people who don't care. For you, the core fan this conversation is for, the real price to be part of that day one cultural event is already $100.
The market has already accepted it. They've just been very clever about how they framed it.
Very clever. Okay, so let's shift to the final piece of the puzzle, the publisher's justification. If you're going to charge $100, you have to prove the value.
And this is where the value per hour math gets really compelling, because even at $100, gaming is still ridiculously cheap entertainment.
I mean, just think about your own spending.
Yeah, my partner and I went out for dinner last week. It was easily $90 for, 2 hours? A concert ticket for a decent artist is $150, easy for maybe 3 hours of music.
Now compare that to a $100 mega game. Even if you only play the main story of something like The Elder Scrolls the 6, that's 80 to 100 hours minimum.
And then you've got the online component, which is basically infinite. So you're talking about like $1 an hour or less.
It's undeniable. Gaming remains, by a huge margin, the most cost-effective form of premium entertainment out there.
Which is the publisher's final argument, isn't it? If their game is so big it stops you from buying any other games for 6 months, they feel like they deserve a bigger piece of your wallet for that one purchase.
They see it as monopolizing your entertainment budget, and they want to be compensated for that up front.
So let's wrap this all up. As we look ahead to this 2026 tipping point, let's summarize what we found in the sources.
The $70 model is mathematically broken. It just doesn't work with $500 million budgets and modern inflation. The dam is going to break, and the thing that breaks it will be an inelastically demanded product like GTA V, which will normalize that $100 price.
The bad news is obvious. The hobby gets more expensive. But our sources did point to a really important trade-off, some potential good news in all this.
Right. The idea is that if the industry can finally charge a price that actually covers the cost of development, it might remove the need for all the predatory stuff.
So a higher base price could mean more polished games, fewer loot boxes, and maybe an end to all these broken, unfinished launches we've been seeing.
You pay more, but you get a cleaner, more complete experience from the start. That's the hope, anyway.
So as we finish this deep dive, we want to leave you with one final thought to consider, now that you're armed with all this context. We've established that the market is splitting into two tiers. Standard AAA at $70 to $80, and the mega games at $100+.
So what happens to the games that are stuck right in the middle? The ambitious AA games, the ones with cool ideas but not billion-dollar budgets?
Yeah. Does that new $100 anchor at the top of the market squeeze them out? Does it make it impossible for them to compete for your wallet? Or
yeah.
Does it do the opposite? Does it create a new space for innovative $40 or $60 games to thrive because they don't have to be a 10-year platform?
Something for you to think about as you watch this new era of gaming economics unfold. We hope this has given you some clarity on why the $100 game isn't just a possibility, but a long overdue economic certainty.
Until next time, keep digging into the source material.